Good afternoon.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Hello and welcome into the Take the North podcast along with Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune and 670 The Score. I am Mark Rohde of Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Both Dan and I cover the Bears on a daily basis, and we are going to get into Caleb Williams. We're going to talk about some of the other parts of the Bears-Washington game that did not have to do with a Hail Mary pass or a bad run play or a guy being out of place and engaging in the stands. So we're going to get to all of that here in just a second. But first of all, Dan, you and I got a text from the Bears this week telling us that the Wednesday practice, they will be doing instead of a full practice, they're going to be doing a no viewing walkthrough practice for the day. It is something that we got a little bit of texture from the Bears on it, that they did the same thing in week 9 last year, as well as two other times. They did the same thing in London as well. But I think you and I both know that there probably is some meaning as to why the Bears are doing this. What is your initial reaction to that? And how are you doing, my good friend?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. What a week this is, and what a week it is going to continue to be as we kind of survey the wreckage of that loss from Sunday. My gut instinct about this walkthrough that was a converted practice is that maybe there's some health issues that the Bears can't fully resolve right now. And the first position I go to is the offensive line, right? You've got a situation on Sunday where they leave the game with Bill Murray injured. He's since been placed on injured reserve. Tevin Jenkins was hurt. Braxton Jones was out of the game and declared out. You're starting to be pretty beat up on the offensive line. And if you're just trying to make sure that you can preserve a unit up until game day, that might be the most logical and least, I don't know what the word is, controversial reasoning for this. If there are other reasons that they're circling the wagons, you've got bigger problems, because this is a situation here. You mentioned week 9, that we were told the last time they did this was week 9 of last year. Well, you know what happened in week 9 of last year? They fired David Walker, the running backs coach, and then they had a closed walkthrough, I think, after that. So you just never know the level of kind of crisis and concern inside the building. We're going to be out there regardless on Wednesday. We won't get our eyes on practice, but we will be in the locker room, and we will be able to take a pulse, Mark, on how these guys are reacting, on how they are feeling, on what it is there. You know, that you've been there like I have. You can feel vibes in certain weeks and on certain days, and I'm certainly eager to get out there and see what the vibe is there and how the Bears are processing this bridge that they've got to cross from a very devastating loss into a very important week to get themselves back on track.
Also, I'm just looking back at last year's scheduling and talking about the, you know, week 9, you did have that Sunday game against the Chargers too, the week before.
A night game in LA, right?
Yes, yes.
And then you're coming back to with Tyson Bagent as your quarterback to go on the road and play the Saints, right?
Your memory is spot on, and it was a bad loss to the Chargers, 30-13 loss with Bagent. The next week, week 9, they lost to the Saints 24-17. I think it's easy to read into it a little bit. You know, you might 100%. Be right. It might be the injuries, and you know they need to do that. That might be it. But they know at this point, Dan, based on what you were just saying about the locker room and all of the comments that we are hearing with players from Cole Kmet to Kevin Byard to Jalen Johnson, calling guys out or just being real, whether it's Jalen Johnson talking about, yeah, we probably should have called a timeout. Cole Kmet paraphrasing, you know, saying that guys are, you know, been on, you know, sounded like it was a bad week of practice last week. So I don't know if this is going to be more of a chance to slow things down, to have your GM out there, to really hold guys accountable during a walkthrough and slow things down and get their footing again, because this is such a crucial point in the season. I know how bad things were in that loss to Washington, but this is still a team that is 4-3 with a chance to pick up a couple of victories at Arizona and the home against New England before the Green Bay and Minnesota game. So, Dan, honestly, I hope that this is more than just there's injuries. I hope that they are doing something, because it sure didn't sound like, based on what Matt Eberflus was saying to us, that they were going to do a whole hell of a lot, or that there would be a whole hell of a lot of consequences regarding the things that we saw happen in that game.
No question about it. And you bring up something that's really relevant in a week like this, and it's that on Monday you had four of your eight team captains going either on the Zoom call with reporters or on their own respective radio shows and openly, publicly questioning coaching decisions, you know, unabashedly saying out loud what a lot of Chicago Bears fans thought during the game on Sunday, and even more as it relates to Cole Kmet and Jalen Johnson talking about the lack of detail in practice and the inability of everyone to be locked in on the things that they need to be locked in on. And then on Tuesday, T.J. Edwards also goes on 670 The Score and pretty much nods and says, I agree, you know, with the things that were said. And so now you have five of your eight team captains who have been on a public stage sharing some concerns about the direction of the team and the coaching that has steered them in that direction. Big week here. You mentioned, if you kind of want to zoom out and take the optimist lens here, the Bears are 4-3. As we came out of London, my thought process was before they get in division play, they got to win two of these next three between the game in Washington, the Cardinals game, and the Patriots game. If you're at 6-3 going into that game against Green Bay, everything's going to feel a lot better. That seemed to be within reach until you got to the final stretches of Sunday. And now you go, oh God, because it flipped so fast because of the fashion of that loss and the manner of that loss. You went from a city that was fully believing that you were moving in the right direction to one that has been calling for the coach's head again, Mark. And now, like, you and I are not the knee jerk meatball overreactor. Like, let's find the most extreme thing that we can say in this situation. But I will say this, in the state that Matt Eberflus is in right now, in my opinion, he's about two more devastating losses like Sunday away from falling completely off the high wire. That is the NFL coaching high wire. Right. And so, is it realistic that Matt Eberflus loses two more games in devastating fashion over the final 10 weeks of this football season? Hell yeah, that's realistic. And at that point, you've got yourself a full-blown crisis on your hands. And so I say that just to really emphasize the stakes of a week like this, about going to Arizona and taking care of your business and beating a beatable opponent, and just understanding that this is the NFL. Like, you don't have time to – you know, as we've talked about previously, show grace through a six-game losing streak. You have a six-game losing streak this year, people are losing their jobs all over the place, and the direction of the franchise is being questioned again. So as easy as it is to say it's just one loss, well, you're tiptoeing really close to the edge of that cliff, and you better get your feet back on steady ground quickly.
And this is probably the point in time where we remind people the Bears have never fired a coach in season, so they still have not done that. Hopefully the fact that they do have Kevin Warren here, I mean, that could be a big factor in doing things differently. I mean, this is a time where his voice probably should be heard, or even if it's backstage and we don't actually hear from him, I hope that he is in on this. I will say this, the last time this year the Bears were in sort of this crisis mode was the Indianapolis loss. The last time that we were talking about Matt Eberflus and mistakes that he made and Shane Waldron having him throw the ball 53 times that day. It was also a bad day, even though he got to 300 yards. It didn't feel like a good day for Caleb Williams. And the Bears did get their acts back together. Unfortunately, it feels pretty similar to now, where it was the players, again, Mercedes Lewis, giving them the coaching staff the proverbial kick in the butt. So how many times can the Bears go to this well of the players having to voice the real concerns and doing it, like you said, on 50,000 watts of radio? That doesn't look good. Like, it sounds good, and it's a good story for the locker room and what we do and what we cover, but from the people at the top, whether it's George McCaskey or Kevin Warren, that does not look good when the players are ruling things. And I don't know if the Bears have another three-game winning streak in them out of this most recent debacle.
There's no question. So you have to be really, really ready to handle your business in a week like this. You can't say it enough, and you can't say it strongly enough, because there is purpose that's needed when everything feels wobbly. Now, to Matt Eberflus's credit, to the players' credit, last year, three devastating blown leads in the fourth quarter against the Broncos, the Lions, and the Browns. The Bears came back each time and won the following week. You know, they put it together and did so in a fashion where you go, okay, they've shown the resolve. They've shown the ability to refocus. There is a level of leadership in that locker room right now that you've heard me say consistently for the last 3 months that I believe in. I believe these guys that are speaking up understand what it is they're trying to accomplish. And I applaud them for not sitting back and just letting the fire spread. You know, it's like, okay, let's get ourselves a bucket of water. If that doesn't work, let's know where the fire extinguisher is. If that doesn't work, let's know how to call the fire department, you know? And they're not just sitting there watching, which we've seen so many times in Bears history where there's a grease fire in the stove and everyone's like, oh, look at that grease fire. And then the next thing you know, the kitchen's engulfed, and the next thing you know, the whole house is coming down, you know? And you can't do that. I think this leadership group understands that they've got a team that if they're not playoff worthy in 2024, they should at least be in that picture to the final down of the season, you know, and they don't want to see the season slip away. And so their ability to identify problems, to take ownership of the problems, to try to get them corrected quickly should be applauded. This is an action week. They got to go back to work. They got to have action, and they've got to get this tone changed quickly, because you lose in Arizona. Can you imagine what the conversation in this city is going to be next week?
Yeah, I mean, 500 based on having had a three-game winning streak and were 4-2, that would look ugly, and I would feel it justified if people started saying, well, here come the Bears. I haven't accepted that yet, even despite this game. I'm not ready to go, well, it's typical Bears and Bearsness. I'm not ready just because of the talent that exists, but we'll be on the lookout for that. And as Dan said, Dan and I will both be in the locker room on Wednesday. Matt Eberflus will be at the podium. That will be big. So we're both looking forward to that and being there. And the quarterback will be speaking as well. His name happens to be Caleb Williams, and we really have not talked about him much, and I think that has been justified because there have been much bigger storylines. But Dan, Caleb Williams in this game, in the loss to Washington, 10 of 24, 131 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions in the game. Let's start with your thoughts on what you thought about Caleb Williams in this game.
Statistically, it wasn't very good. You knew that again late in the third quarter when he had three completions and one of them was for no gain on fourth and one, right? Like you were having a really difficult time in your passing offense getting anything going. I want to hear from Caleb on Wednesday and Shane on Thursday for their diagnosis on what took them so long to find any sort of rhythm. You know, statistically, there's not much there that you shine a light on and go, you can feel good about that. Going back through it, the fourth quarter rebound of Caleb Williams is not to be downplayed, because I don't know how many times we've watched a Bears quarterback struggle and struggle and struggle, and they just keep struggling until the day is over. A rookie's ability to find himself in that environment in the fourth quarter of a close game and step up when plays were needed to be made to put them in position to win the football game is really impressive. And Caleb Williams deserves a lot of credit for showing that gene in his DNA that he can do that, that he can have a really bad day and still be ready to play his best when his best is called for, you know, and that was evident on Sunday on those final two drives and some of the high level throws that he made. The other thing that I noted, Mark, as I was going back through it, I do a little thing on X every week where I grade every single one of Caleb's passing plays with an emoji. There's a star, a thumbs up, a shrug, a thumbs down, and a puke emoji, right?
Okay.
When I get through that this week, the number of thumbs up and star plays is basically identical to what he did in Jacksonville. And so you go, okay, the high level stuff was still coming out. And a lot of it again was down the stretch. There were just so many more thumbs down plays. And it was, there just seemed to be a rickety lack of timing in the passing game. There was screens that were getting blown up. They weren't able to kind of smooth some of that over. And the one gross play that I had in there was the 15-yard sack at the end of the first half, because Look, to me, that was just, it's on the offensive line. There was some disarray up front before the play started. But situationally, as a quarterback, you have to know we are inside the kick line. We have 3 points here. And even if Caleb had taken the 8-yard sack instead of the 15-yard sack by fighting to keep the play alive, the Bears walk out of that drive with 3 points. They're a little bit more steady, and they go to halftime with a little better feeling about them. That play was a little bit unforgivable. But on the whole, I walked away from the film review feeling a little bit better than Caleb's performance than I did walking out of Northwest Stadium on Sunday night.
All right, let's do a drill here. Let's do an impromptu drill, because I want to try to guess some of your elite level passes. What's the top emoji again, Dan?
It's a star. It's a nice little star. It's a star power play. It's one of those plays where you say that is the type of play that a all-pro MVP caliber quarterback in this league makes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let me see if I could guess those. Fourth quarter, it's 12-7 Washington. That pass downfield where he drops it in the bucket to DJ Moore, which was ahead of unfortunately, the Doug Kramer. I believe that was the same drive.
Yes, it was.
So was that a star? Am I right to say that that was a star play by Caleb Williams?
That was a star play. And yes, and that was, you're right. That's on the drive that ultimately ended with the Doug Kramer fumble.
Yes.
But that got a huge star.
Okay.
I wrote in my notes here next to it, the ball placement is elite. And he took a lick from Bobby Wagner as he was throwing that football. And that's not to be overlooked because he stood in the pocket. Justin Fields made one of those throws in Pittsburgh, his rookie season, on Monday Night Football, where it showed that level of toughness where he just stood in there and took a shot and delivered a dime. This was similar in terms of that ability to know you're going to get hit and still have the arm talent and the toughness to put that ball right on the money.
The other one that I had, and probably more as well, the next drive, fourth quarter, it was my favorite pass of the game, and he's done this a couple times now. The across the body pass to Keenan Allen, where it's looking like he rolls right, looking like he might even run out of bounds. He might throw the ball down the sideline, or he might throw across his body back to the middle of the field to Keenan Allen. Does that get a star, Weeder?
That also got a star. So you're playing this game perfectly here, Mark, and then this might be a new little feature here on the podcast. But, like, you know, again, that's ad-lib magic there by your quarterback. And the thing I loved about it was my favorite play of the day, too, because the touch that he put on that football was just something where you go, man, that's just a dude who knows how to create, you know, like that's just a playmaker, you know. It wasn't panicked. It wasn't rushed. It was just like, okay, first of all, I'm running play action and I'm dead to rights. When I come out of my play fake, I stutter, I get outside 90. It was 92 that was coming at him. He gets outside. Now he's got three more guys coming at him calmly, patiently, throws that ball with such beautiful touch. I think it's 22 yards is the ultimate game there. And you just go, yeah, that's it. I mean, like, that's the stuff that leads you to believe that there might be, you know, a deep run in the playoffs in this kid's future while he's still on his rookie contract.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll get to some of the other elite plays. But on the overall, like, I agree with you. I was very disappointed, though, with the way he started this game with the bobbled snap. The delay of game, and I'm not exactly sure who that was on. The second drive of the game, the overthrow to Roma Dunze, and the one that really crushed my soul was the overthrow screen to Keenan Allen on the second drive, where he had green grass. I don't know what Keenan Allen would have done with it, but I think that would have been an explosive gain right there. And then just for the heck of it, he misses to Gerald Everett on that as well. So I'm imagining, Dan, that those were probably, and I actually had down the 15-yard sack as well. I imagine that you noted those as a couple of duds. I just don't it better at the beginning of the game than at the end of the game, but he just looked so inaccurate for a lot of the game too. I thought he was holding the ball a little bit too long as well. Like, we weren't getting that quick release that we were starting to get used to out of him. But just the early part of that game, I don't know what it was. He was just wholly inaccurate.
This is your worry with the health of this offensive line right now, for certain, right? Because you say, like, if you can't get your quarterback comfortable, a rookie is going to show you those moments that Caleb showed early in that football game where he just seemed disjointed. It seemed like the timing of everything was off. His feet were a little bit, you know, frenetic more than we've seen. And then you see it in a game in London where it's like, okay, he's got time. He's comfortable. He's seeing it. He's throwing it. It's on time. It's on target. And you feel the flow of the offense get going again. Like that first half and really deep into the third quarter, you're getting nothing going. You know, you have, you don't score your first points until late in the third, and that can't happen in a Bright Lights big stage game like Sunday was. Look, you're going to get another Another opportunity Sunday. We're going to talk about this more later in the week. This Cardinals defense is nothing to write home about. They're 26th in the league defending the run, 26th in the league and defending the pass, worst team in the league and on third down. And so, like, you better find some answers as an offense, as a coaching staff, as a quarterback to get yourself rolling. Hopefully they're able to get a faster start than they've had at any point this year, because once again, seven games in, they have yet to score first in a ball game this year.
One more thing I want to add to the fray, and feel free to add more on Caleb Williams, but what about his running ability? We saw him run it 10 times for 41 yards. We know that that's not, you know, he said all along that he doesn't want to do that. I know he's probably taken some sacks at times this year where he probably should have run, but we did see his ability to be elusive at a 10 at times in this game. That's really where, like, you know, I think that the Patrick Mahomes stuff had to calm down the comps to him. That was fun to do, but that's one part. And I'll throw Aaron Rodgers in there as well in terms of being elusive. When you see the guy, like, where he's not lightning fast, I mean, but he is quick in small spaces, and it's not like he's slow, but it is immaculate to watch him get out of some of those tight spaces. And for the most part, I wasn't doing the thing where you put your hands over your head, like, oh no, get down, do not.
Right.
There was a couple times where he took on tacklers, but for the most part, I thought that there were some design runs as well, but for the most part, I thought that he stayed within the game with his runs, and big thumbs up to his ability to elude, for sure.
I think I had seven of those 10 runs on passing play. So those are tuck and run scrambles where you're trying to create. I've said that watching Justin Fields run the football was like sitting, you know, up close for a NASCAR race, right? And you just couldn't believe the speed and the power and just how impressive it was, right? Like, you'd see it with your eyes and go, whoa, like, that's pretty cool. Caleb is more like a skier, you know, and you just see him kind of finding the glide and finding the space and finding the timing of it a little bit. And you saw that a few times. There are a couple runs that, you know, there's one scramble where third down where he slid short of the sticks. That's a play where you want to have the awareness of knowing where you've got to get to. If you've got to put your head down and run through somebody, do it. Didn't love that one, but there are several other runs where he's just creating again. And like that pocket feel to get away from people is really, really, really fun, you know? And when it turns into a 13-yard gain, it's even more fun. Even when it turns into a 2-yard gain, you say, man, there's something cool about the way he feels heat and can kind of shuffle to get away from it. And then when it's time to run, he seems to have a great instinct to know it's time to run rather than let me keep my eyes downfield and see if I can make anything happen with my arm. What happens with that is you've got now defenders coming up. And then the play that we both love the most on Sunday has got four guys in pursuit of him trying to stop him. And okay, you want to try that? Here you go, Keenan, 22 yards, go get it, right? And so that's where the Mahomesian magic comes in, because as a defense, you don't know what to do at that point. Like, do we try to stop him, or do we, you know, keep our discipline? It becomes really difficult, and so that's pretty impressive.
So would you call this game, and maybe I'll answer my question first, a net positive for Caleb Williams, a net neutral for Caleb Williams, or a net negative for Caleb Williams?
That's a good question. I would probably go net negative, but just a little bit, just because of how poor they started and they just didn't find it soon enough. Now, like, if I'm taking the biggest picture lens on what it means for his future, then I'm saying net positive, because I just think what he showed in the fourth quarter, the ability to find it in a game where you didn't have it, is you can't teach that. And it just speaks to me of what people have talked about him for a long time, that he's just in it. Like, he's immersed in the game. He understands when it's winning time. He's gonna, you know, really lock in those moments. And no matter how poorly things have gone up to that point, he's got a short-term memory. So that part I love. I just, you know, man, like, they didn't score early enough in that game with the defense keeping him around and keeping him around and keeping him around and keeping him around to really turn the tide soon enough. And then maybe we wouldn't be talking about the comeback, and then we wouldn't be talking about the Hail Mary. You just got to get your offense on track sooner. And so that's where I'd say net negative as it relates to Sunday's game. But in the big picture, I think it's got to be a net positive.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I mean, you can't go three quarters and, us able to go through and find specifically poor moments for Caleb Williams and look at it as a positive. But yeah, I mean, for sure. I think part of it too was, and this just goes for the whole team in general, coming off the win in London and the excitement level, you kind of like, what I've said on the radio all along about Caleb Williams is that I think he's going to be great. I still think he's going to be great. And there's going to be a point where he's going to be great and we're never going to look back. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know if it's going to happen this season, but there was part of me that thought coming off that the win in London that maybe this is the blast off point. And I think it was probably a reality check for me, for Caleb Williams, and for the Bears in general, because everybody was riding high until this moment of just kind of hitting the wall.
Yeah, no question about it. And, it, you know, to his credit, like, he does wind up with a turnover in the game. We all know how that happened. But he's taking care of the football better than he was in September. And his month of October in terms of ball security was really, really good. And he's going to get credited with that fumble. But we all know where that fumble needs to be credited. That fumble needs to be credited to whoever called the play, you know, and greenlit it, you know, because that was just not the time or the place to do that.
Last thing before we move on to our final segment. Do you think that that Caleb will this week, how do you think he's going to handle things out there this week in terms of imposing his own will and what his part will be in terms of being in that leadership committee?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up because that's one of the questions that I want to ask him when he gets up to the lectern on Wednesday is what is on your plate this week as a rookie and as a captain of this football team, knowing that this is not an ordinary week. Like, there is obvious duress. You had Kevin Byard, a ninth-year guy in the league, basically saying the 24-hour rule doesn't apply this week. You know, if you need to take 48 hours, he said, take 48 hours, right? Like, and so there was an acknowledgement that this one stung more than most. And so Caleb's role in getting that steadied is significant. And I'm curious to see how he handles that. I will say this, and I actually told this to my family as they were kind of recounting the game from Sunday. I said, if you want to watch kind of a snapshot of leadership ability, it's Caleb's 8 minutes with the media after the game. I wasn't in there. I was back in the locker room there, the visiting locker room, talking to defensive players. When I rewatched it, his ability to kind of encapsulate that game, express himself, you know, show frustration, but really do so in a manner where you're like, you felt like, okay, he's going to be in a good place. You know, he's going to find himself in a good place quickly. And his role is to get everyone around him back in a good place too. And I just thought it was really impressive for a rookie dealing with a massive loss like that, to have that composure in that moment to handle himself. We've seen a lot of quarterbacks go up there and their agitation is obvious, you know, and it's edgy and it doesn't make you feel great. And it is what it is. But so that's part of the Caleb equation for week 9, and we'll see how he handles it.
Dan, for our final segment, in the name of actually talking about things that happened in the game other than the Hail Mary and Doug, and I think we did Caleb Williams justice, and I hope we return to our regular programming of Caleb, 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 because it's still all about Caleb. But what other things, and you and I could kind of do it in draft form, go back and forth on things that we thought were consequential or interesting in this Bears 18-15 loss to Washington. And Dan, I'm going to give you the first go at this one.
Yeah, why don't we do two apiece here, and I'll start it off. You know, things that we would be talking about had the Bears walked out of there with 15-12 in their back pocket as opposed to that. And I'm going to start with DeAndre Swift, because – you talk about two plays that we would have spent like a day and a half talking about if the Bears had won 15-12. The first one is obviously the 56-yard touchdown run where he just hit the Jets. And all of a sudden, a team that had no life had life. And you go, well, now you're within one score, you know. And DeAndre Swift just did that. You know, he just did that. He took the second down play and turned it into a touchdown with some good vision, a cut, and speed to go down the sideline without being touched. And then obviously later he creates what was a viral highlight that would have been awesome to watch over and over if Tyrese Stevenson hadn't topped him with his own viral highlight. But the hurdle on that big run, like, I mean, just ridiculous. I don't remember what the gain on that play was, but I do know that, like, in live action, you were just like, man, that was really cool. And considering the moment, it was even cooler.
Oh, yeah, man. No, I had both of those. That's a great first-round pick right there. You just snagged mine.
DeAndre Swift finished with 129 yards. I guess he didn't have a catch. So 129 and a touchdown. That's a big day, you know, a day where your offense couldn't get going.
Well, and the beauty of the hurdle is and I did on this play, whenever a guy goes for the hurdle, I'm like, oh, no, because it just feels like when you fail, it looks horrible, and it feels like you're going to kill yourself. But he cleared that puppy, man, and that's I mean, that's not the first time he's – that was his best hurdle, but he's a – he likes doing this. I don't remember which game it was after, but I remember talking to him about it in the locker room, and he, you know, just kind of having fun with it. But he took it very seriously. He's like, no, that's what I do, and that's what he did. And it's so important that he gets himself going. And DeAndre Swift, at least we don't have to worry about him for now. I'm going to go with the Montez Sweat sack in the third quarter of this game. We all know how big of a game this was for Montez Sweat going home. It didn't feel like there was that much of, you know, of emotions coming out of Sweat. It was sort of the same sort of Montez in that game. But that was one of many plays by the defense that was critical in keeping them to field goals. I believe, yeah, it forced a field goal to make a 12-0 Washington at the time. So I thought that that was big in the complexion of the game, and just to get Montez Sweat another sack, because we know that eventually people, and if you're going to be paid like that and you're going to be paid like an elite pass rusher, you do need to rack up those sack numbers. I don't care how many people are on you, the chips and the extra protection and the running backs. I just thought that was an important moment in the game for Montez.
Yeah, now we got to get some treatment on that shin, and he's got to get back out on the football field, because I think a lot of people were hoping that he would have been on the field for that Hail Mary. I had somebody say to me, he better be on the field in Arizona, because if he's able to play in Arizona and he didn't find a way to gut it out for a game deciding play in Washington, they're going to be disappointed. And so we'll see what happens there. That was a good one. And obviously you want to see him make that impact. I'll kind of stay on that theme for my second pick. And I'll go with the red zone defense, because don't look now, the Bears are number one in the league in red zone defense. And it showed up on Sunday with them holding the Commanders to 12 points before the Hail Mary, 4 field goals, and they also forced a miss kick. That one was outside the red zone. But you had some big plays inside the red zone early on in that football game that made a difference in keeping you alive. There's one in the first quarter that starts with a Montez Sweat pressure of Jaden Daniels, and then Jaden Daniels eludes Montez Sweat enough to throw a nice ball into the end zone to Luke McCaffrey, and Josh Blackwell forces him out of the end zone, right? Like, that's a play. That's a game-winning play. I think I said that's one of those moments that, you know, coaches talk about 4-point plays, right? Like turning a touchdown into a field goal on defense, turning a field goal into a touchdown on offense. That's a 4-point play that Montez Sweat and Josh Blackwell combined on. You have that in a moment where you've got the best red zone defense in the NFL. They're doing all these things to keep you alive. By the way, they extended their streak of holding opponents to 21 points or fewer, albeit with the poor end result. And then I'm going to give another one, a shout out to Tyreek Stevenson for the pass breakup on Zach Ertz. It's another play inside the red zone that turns a touchdown into a field goal. And you just say, man, like, that would have been a big moment for Tyreek Stevenson if it hadn't been for, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's like he was 1-for-4 on the day, because he was beaten. I know we already talked about this, but beaten by McLaurin, the bad penalty later on McLaurin. But yeah, that was crucial. Quite frankly, watching it, you know, and I'm sure you saw all the replays in the press box, I thought that was going to be a touchdown, but I know there was a pool report on that as well. But yeah, absolutely, I agree with that. I want to go back to running back. And ironically enough, I want to go to Roschon Johnson, because I know, like, they should have just gone to Roschon on the Doug Kramer play, but they have figured something out with Roschon Johnson. He is not going to be a number one running back in this league. And I think that everybody kind of went overboard with him because he ran behind Bijan Robinson in Texas and all of that kind of stuff. And the Bears do like him. They have found a purpose for Roschon Johnson. He now has 4 touchdown runs this year. So that's a really good thing as we try to figure out that running back's room. For that matter, DeAndre Swift is up to 4 touchdowns as well. So that's how you are supposed to do it. But I want to give that thumbs up to Roschon Johnson right there, because he's just and now that they have failed with trying something outside of the box, I think that we're going to see more and more of Roschon Johnson banging it in on the 1 or the 2 yard line.
Yeah, let's stay inside the box, right? And let's put that in the suggestion box at Halas Hall. Give the ball to Roschon if you get 1 yard, and especially if that 1 yard is the 1 yard line, give the ball to Roschon. Like, let's stuff that in the suggestion box when we get back out there. You know how much they take our input to account at Halas Hall. That suggestion box in the media room gets filled up pretty quickly. Oh, yeah. And over the years, they just consistently put our stuff into the game plans. You know how it works out there. So maybe we both write it up. We put it on separate post-it notes, put it in there twice, and we stuff the ballot box.
Hashtag TTN, bro. That's what it is. You know, take the North, yo. You got another one, man, or is it my turn? I don't remember.
I think that's the four. Okay. That's our four. Yeah, so we've completed the job, you know?
That's the draft. I'll throw one more. Let me give you a bonus one. And this goes to Eberflus, actually. The TJ Edwards sack in the third quarter. I love that they've been getting so much pressure from guys that are not necessarily on the defensive line. The creativity of the defense and the blitzes and getting home with those guys has been really good. And TJ Edwards did a great job of disguising that on that particular play.
You know, it's like you listen to the last 7 minutes of this episode and you go, man, the Bears played a pretty encouraging football game on Sunday, right? Like there are things that you can find in there where you go, man, there's things here. Now you just got to put the biggest shovel you can find and bury the hell out of the finish of that football game and get past it as soon as possible, because you literally don't have time to stick on that. I know it's a walkthrough Wednesday, but it's an important walkthrough, Mark Rohde.
Yeah, it is. It's huge. This might be the most important walkthrough of the season. That's what we could be talking about. Keep listening for updates here on the Take the North podcast. Like I said, Dan Weeder and myself, Mark Rohde, we are at Halas Hall every day. We work every single corner of the locker room. We're at the practices that we are allowed to watch. We are at the podium. So we're going to be bringing you the freshest information. We can absolutely promise you that. We hope you like and subscribe to the Take the North podcast. All sorts of advantages with that. You could also comment. We love your feedback on this podcast. So we certainly appreciate the support that the Take the North podcast has gotten. And so for Dan Weederer of the Chicago Tribune, our fine producer, Adam Sidzinski, I'm Mark Rohde. We'll talk to you later.
Great talk. See you out there.
Thank you, everybody. The Bears.